In recent days, the Bush administration has tried to downplay the urgency of the U.S. government's standoff with North Korea while keeping focused on Iraq. Now, President Bush has yet to decide when or whether to go to war against Iraq, but the signs of military buildup are manifest. Reserve units across the United States are now on active duty, adding to the growing swell of troops, ships, and materiel in the Persian Gulf. U.S. and British warplanes are shooting at radar targets in Iraq's no-fly zones almost every day. A strategic psychological campaign has already begun. The U.S. government is encouraging Iraq's top generals to defy Saddam Hussein, warning that any military commanders who unleash chemical weapons, harm civilians, or attack neighboring countries will be prosecuted for war crimes. Now, psychological warfare dates back to the earliest known chronicles of military strategy. That has the United States, or any power, ever been able to defeat an enemy by winning over its generals? Retired Marine Lieutenant General Bernard Traynor is co-author of The General's War, the inside story of the conflict in the Gulf. He joins us from the studios of member station WBUR in Boston. General, thanks so much for being with us.
Hello, Scott.
Take us a bit back in the history books, if you can. In what ways has this strategy paid off in the past?
Well, it is interesting. In modern times, you don't have many examples. I think the classic example was when the Mao Zedong's forces were battling the Kuomintang, the nationalists, in China right after World War II. And Mao was able to seize the countryside and drive the Kuomintang forces into the cities. And they came to the conclusion, they being the Chiang Kai-shek's forces, realized that the jig was up. Mm-hmm. And so you had wholesale defections back over to the communists. More contemporary accounts, I think, would include South Vietnamese War, when the South Vietnamese soldiers saw that the jig was up and they simply took off their uniforms in many instances and tried to escape. And then, of course, you have the case there most recently in Afghanistan, where you had units that were associated with the Taliban turning against them. But the instances that I have cited, most of them were not as the result of a psychological warfare campaign. It was a result of common sense, with the losing side recognizing that their doom was sealed, and they just decided that giving up was better than being gunned down in what was a battle or a war that they knew they were going to lose.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would be the chances of any Iraqi generals deciding to take history into their own hands?
Oh, I think there's a strong possibility. There have been attempted coups in the past, including coups by the Republican Guard leadership. And the interesting thing, Scott, is that all of these coups, they were all suppressed, came from within the inner circles of Saddam Hussein's entourage. But, you know, that creates a problem. Let's say that they do, and therefore we say, well, we don't have to invade, but you have the same bunch of gangsters in there, less Saddam Hussein, who are running the country, and we can't tolerate that.
Mm-hmm. One of the points that I think U.S. and British leaflets and broadcasts have made over the past few weeks and perhaps even months to Iraqi forces and the Iraqi people has been, we're going to have war crimes trials. If any of you folks participate in any of these actions, if you attack a neighboring country, they probably mean Israel. If you launch chemical weapons or weapons of mass destruction, there are going to be trials thereafter. To what degree does this, in your mind, affect the thinking of anybody who's on the other side of the line in Iraq right now?
Well, I think it's very persuasive. They all know about the Nuremberg trials. They all know that they are going to be defeated. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that they want to have done, other than get killed, is to be end up with a noose around their neck. So I think it has an enormous impact. Now, I don't think it will have an impact on the real diehards, those whose fate is directly connected with Saddam Hussein, you know, his Tikriti crowd. But I think anybody who is a senior person in the Iraqi army or in the Republican Guard, other than the hardcore zealots, will give pause.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible, General, we're on the verge of seeing here a war that could be won through the presence and the threat of strength, short of its application?
If you can create the image in the minds of those who are your enemy that he is going to be defeated, then you have demoralized him. You have automatically created the conditions for an easy victory. But the point is, you're not going to be able to create that impression in the person's mind just by rhetoric. Yeah. He has to see a visible example of the amount of power and might that you are going to bring against him. And that's why it's so important right now for this buildup in the Gulf, with getting the infantry divisions going, mobilizing the reserves, getting the aircraft carriers down there, getting the flying in the aircraft and the logistics and the headquarters and so forth. All of this sort of thing is going to convince the enemy that we are serious about it, and they better think twice about trying to defend a bankrupt regime.
General, thank you very much.
All right, Scott, it's been my pleasure.
Retired Marine Lieutenant General Bernard Traynor is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and co-author of the book, The General's War: The Inside Story of the Conflict in the Gulf.